So our meeting today, our main topic is Anil John, and we invited him to come speak with us today because he's been such a big supporter of the work we've been doing for decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials. And it's not just lip service. He's actually invested in a lot of projects, many of us who are on this call, myself included. And it's not only in the technology that he's done investing in, it's also in the research and with the new design competition. So he's really been a great supporter, and from the government perspective, a supporter of this new technology infrastructure. And so while we know a lot of what he's been, you know, he's shared based on the things that he's funded, clearly we thought he might have some really great insights to share with the rest of the community regarding funding the decentralized identity development for the past few years. So, so that's what we're going to start with today. IP notes, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work item must be a member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. And you can do that by signing up for the credentials community group. Okay. These notes and minutes, there will be an audio recording of everything that's said on this call, and we'll archive it. Since this is the first time we're using Jitsi, we are using a new auto recording, and however, we still will need a scribe. We use IRC to queue speakers, and so we're going to be using this chat. And so if you're in Jitsi, please type Q plus, because the queue is a little bit different and some of the functionality that we had in the IRC is a little bit different. Please be patient, with, the chairs monitoring the queue. Let's see. If you're just on audio, just kind of busting, I guess that's not really applicable. Okay. So we need to get a scribe. Manu, I saw you were already scribing. Do you want to, you're taking care of some stuff behind the scenes. Do I have someone who's maybe an experienced scribe, that is willing to scribe for this one? Maybe kind of out of turn since we are, testing this new system. Juan, great. Thank you so much for scribing.
Hey, Heather, can you hear me?
Yeah, Wayne, are you there?
Yeah, I'm all back. Sorry. I was actually having computer issues while testing this new system, but I think we're all A-okay now.
Okay, great. Can I hand it back to you?
Of course. Yeah. Thanks so much for covering.
And, please cover anything I didn't, because I really wasn't prepared to do this this morning.
Apologies for that and super.
No worries.
I think you did
I got her back.
Okay, cool. So yes, scribe selection. Thank you so much, Juan, for volunteering, to scribe. And, effectively, again, we'll be hearing from Anil today. So, now we're going to move on to introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone here new on the call who would like to introduce themselves? Anyone is welcome to just speak up and, you know, introduce themselves, you know, to get to know the community. Going once. Doing twice.
Can we have Manu do a reintroduction?
Oh, well, I was about to move to the reintroductions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, sorry. I didn't mean, I always get these things confused.
Well, now sorry. That we're in the reintroductions, go ahead if you want to cue yourself or, cool. Does anyone else want to? Okay, Manu, you have cued yourself. Would you like to reintroduce yourself to the community?
Sure. Hi, my name's Manu Sporni. I'm one of the founders and CEO of Digital Bazaar. We have been in this space for a long time and contribute mostly to specifications, verifiable credentials, decentralized identifiers, JSON-LD. I'm thrilled to see this community grow. And you know, we've got a really great group of people here. So it's always been wonderful to work with folks, and I look forward to working with everyone here for many years to come. That's it.
Great reintroduction. Would anyone else like to reintroduce themselves? Feel free to queue up or just start speaking. Hakan Yildiz, I don't know if we've seen your introduction on the calls before, but you know, we'd love to hear from you if you'd like to. You may need to unmute if you're connected on Jitsi. Okay, moving on. Does anyone else want to reintroduce themselves to the community? We are very okay here with uncomfortable silence.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah, just fine. Welcome.
Perfect. Awesome. I'm using this for the first time, so I wasn't having some technical difficulties. In any case, hi, my name is Hakan, and I'm working as a research assistant at the Technical University of Berlin and currently working on a showcase project for German Economic Ministry about safe digital identities in German. And I am a part of a consortium called SSI for Germany, led by Mine Incubator, Commerzbank. We are deploying Hyperledger Indie version of SSI for our network, basically.
Thanks so much for the introduction. Great. Is there anyone else who would like to reintroduce themselves? MP Rorock Measure.io. Oh, we would love to hear
from you. Yeah, great. It's been probably about 2 months since I introed, so I figured I'd just jump in. So Mike Perrock here, founder and CTO over at Measure.io. I would say we're kind of a blockchain and digital identity secondary, but a lot of our business relies on that. We work primarily in agriculture and in environmental analytics. So think obvious supply chain use cases, track and trace, and then linking in particular from our side is a lot of disease risk, toxin issues that we predict for out in the field or during the supply chain. So we're integrating pretty heavily on this side, and that's been expanding quite a bit this year and looks like it's going to continue to expand based on a lot of the use cases we're seeing come in from customers. So we'll be certainly engaging more over the next few months and ongoing. So.
Great. Thank you so much for that reintroduction. So moving on to general announcements and reminders. So IIW is happening October 20th to 22nd. I believe the early bird tickets are already sold out they have stopped being sold. Definitely it's one of the key events in the ecosystem where a lot of people gather. It's less of a conference and more of a coffee house or a tavern kind of feeling where you get to meet a lot of interesting folks working across different parts of the technology and you choose your own adventure there. So it was very successful as an online-only event last time, and, you know, we expect the same here. So please look out for that. It's in the announcements link. Another announcement that I'd like to make is, as you know, we are on this Jitsi system now, and there may be some hiccups along the way as we figure out how to best use it, but it seems that we're all here now and the major functionality is here and we have excellent Scribe working. We'll have to cut down on some of the bot noise, et cetera, but more or less, we'll get this system fully figured out. So, one thing related to Jitsi is that now that we do have a Jitsi system, we can now move forward on our prerogatives within APAC, that is Asia and Pacific, to figure out how to get some of the other W3C branches involved in our discussions. especially those in regions that can't necessarily access all proprietary software systems. Jitsi is open and free, and we can choose the server domains. Right now it's hosted on Azure. And Azure supports many different geographies, but there's no reason why it can't live on a different cloud provider. So just a big thank you to Manu, who reintroduced himself earlier, for his work on the system, because he really delivered the brunt of the configuration, integration with note-taking functionality, and all the things that we expect. But now we can also do things like screen sharing and to really enhance presentations, et cetera. So a big thank you to Manu and Digital Bazaar for contributing many, many hours to this effort. You know, it's going to be an iterative process, but we've made huge leaps so far. Now I'll turn it open to any other announcements from the ecosystem. Feel free to queue yourself up if you would like to add an announcement or something like that. Okay, with that, no more announcements, we can move on to the next section, and we'll call them progress and action items. We already started to dive into one of them. Let me paste in IRC where you can find them. So these are the items that we're going to review. So there are three, starting with the first one. Because I think we have some of the work item owners here on the call, or the proposed work item owners across Ori from Transmute, Manu from Digital Bazaar, and Tobias from Matter. Would you like to have an opportunity to tell the group about what this new work item proposal is, ED25519 signature, that's issue 151. What's the importance and what do you hope to accomplish with the work item? We're all excited to hear about it. Let's see.
Is Ori here?
I don't know that he is.
I can, I'll go on the queue then if Ori's not here. Okay. So, this is really Ori's work item. Ori's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes to try and fill out a lot of the linked data security specifications that the group's working on. This came out of a desire to have a kind of best practice specification around what a linked data security suite should look like. All of the ones that we have right now, the code's been working for a long time, but the specifications have lagged behind. And Ori felt that it would be good to provide a really good example of what other people should follow if they're going to write a linked data security suite. So we chose something that many organizations are using to try and just focus our efforts. So there were multiple companies working on, you know, something that everyone was using. So that's what this work item is. It's boring from a functionality perspective because it's just doing a refresh on what has existed for a while. But we're trying to, you know, do our best to put the right things into the specification and then update the other specifications like linked data proofs and linked data signatures appropriately, so all of those are ready to go into the standardization process. So this is also helping push other work in the area forward as people start adopting the linked data security stack more and more. That's it.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. For people who aren't familiar with those, you know, funny letters and numbers, ED25519, that is an elliptic curve that happens to show up in some federal guidelines for security from NIST. A lot of government organizations, which are based on federal guidelines, will want to see support for that. So, this is why you might hear about that curve versus the SecP curves, that come a lot from the blockchain ecosystem and are making their way into widespread enterprise usage, but enough on that. And so And thank you for the update. So moving on to the next topic, next actions here are to ratify this as a item, and we have more than one owner on this, so we're moving forward. The chairs would just create a repository and formalize the beginning of that by adding it to the work items list. We're moving on to issue 144, synthesize what's in a wallet, part one and part two into a report. So a little bit of context on this issue, because I opened it, this stemmed from our What's in a Wallet series. We had two parts where we heard a bunch of different perspectives from the community about what is a wallet, what is in a wallet, and we have some next steps there, and I see Heather has added herself to the queue. So you have the floor, Heather.
Yeah, I just wanted to address that because I wrote the blog post on the Credentials Community Group list and that just did a high-level overview of all of the speakers across the two sessions and linked to whatever presentation or other material. Juan had done a lot of extracting out of the minutes, and then I had also done a pretty detailed Twitter thread for the week, second week. So I basically just put all those things up. Now, I think the idea was like, there's an opportunity here if someone wants to write some kind of like synthesis piece. And I think the thing that's really important is, and this kind of dovetails with the new design challenge that Anil's doing, is that there are a lot of different perspectives on what should be in a wallet. And, you know, there's no gold standard. There's no one right way or wrong way. And I think what we wanted to show in those two meetings is the diversity of the different perspectives so that we could kind of have cross-pollination within this group to strengthen the both philosophical, the design, the product feature, and the technical requirements, or, you know, what potentially could get executed, built based on that. So there's an opportunity to do additional synthesis on this. There's also an opportunity, if you're one of the speakers and you want to comment more, you can reply with a comment. And I think at this point, too, it probably is interesting to note that I've kind of started reblogging on this Credentials community blog. Look for more updates on that. That is relevant to what we're talking about.
Great. Thank you so much for your work on this, Heather. Really appreciate the update. And also thank you to Juan for your collection of the materials and synthesizing a lot of things. I see that Kim is on the queue. You're recognized.
Yeah, I think either you or Manu added a bug or feature where I get bumped from the queue whenever I add myself. So I've been trying to add myself for a while. So I'm actually talking about Ori joined the call when we were talking about ED25519. And so I was interested to hear from Ori, you know, how it relates, how that work item relates to other like JWS 2020 spec, and how are they complementary, or, you know, is it sort of more about their relationship, and anything else Ori wants to add about the work item.
Okay, great. Ori, would you like to respond? And Kim will make sure to remove that if statement that targets you.
Thank you.
Sure. There are other suites that use that same curve. So the ED25519 curve is used by ED25519 signature 2018 and is also used in the JSON web signature 2020 linked data signature suite. That curve is actually also used in a number of other signature suites, like the JCS signature suite, which doesn't use RDF dataset normalization. So that curve is fairly popular. The main difference between this new ED25519 signature 2020 and those older linked data signature suites is this one, we're attempting to remove any external signature packing mechanism. So no extra JWS verbosity, just raw signature formats. And we're also attempting to upgrade the support for binary representations to something that's a little bit more future-proof, which relies on multi-codec and multi-formats. That's the main difference. So JSON Web Signature does not support multi-codec or multi-formats. When you see a JWS, it's a JWS. That's part of the reason that suite is built the way that it is specifically so that it's easier to have the same verification method be used for vanilla Jose and linked data signatures. Whereas ED25519 signature 2020, its purpose is to sort of be more forward facing in terms of multi-codecs, and, you know, IPLD and some of the more linked data binary representations, you know, related to CBOR LD, things like that. So it's leaning more towards that space. Whereas JWS signature 2020 is leading more towards the old world of, Ayana and Jose. It's probably enough rambling about that.
Thanks so much for your answer. Adrian, I believe you're on the queue.
Yes. So I'm interested in the wallet synthesis project, and I would like to contribute to it. The question I have is that the right now it seems at least the post, the issue that's there is very meta. How does one catch up to whether there's a consensus or whether, you know, is any part of what's been done so far? So let me give you a, for instance, you know, are wallets, is there a general understanding of wallets could be custodial or cold in the sense that people expect the term wallet in the Bitcoin world to be used? How does one catch up with the current state of that project? The thread itself is not helpful. The issue as it stands just has a bunch of links in it.
So the queue, I think, Jonathan, you're on the queue.
You want to answer it for Adrian first?
Well,
yep.
Heather, I jumped on the queue to answer that.
Okay, understood. Yep, would you like to answer that, Heather?
Sure, yeah. So, Adrian, I think that it is a fool's errand to try to have any kind of consensus about, to create consensus about these different views about a wallet. Instead, I think, like, in service of those views, to take the perspective of these are different views or, if you want to expand upon ones that you feel most aligned with or challenge, you know, say these aspects, I agree. I like for these reasons, these aspects seem troublesome in these ways. I think that might be a better approach because, there's a lot of different perspectives and, we're just going to have more perspectives. And to do the best service towards everyone's different viewpoints from the different places they're coming from, we just need to acknowledge that. Does that help give you any kind of like guidance on that?
Sure. What you're saying is that all of us that want to contribute would want to do so in terms of an opinion piece or a position piece to be added to the, or, you know, to the dozen or 15 ones that are already there.
Yes. Unless you have like you're like, based on these things, this is how it made me think about this stuff. Or if like you presented, like if one of the presenters wanted to say, based on participating in the What's in a Wallet, I have expanded my thinking or evolved my thinking in this way. So kind of as we're moving forward as a group, how we are influencing each other. And, I mean, like, I just don't think there's, Everyone's individual perspectives on these from these different perspectives is valid. And the way we move forward to the best wallet is by having all those different perspectives come out.
Thank you for the response. Let's try to have a conversation in the thread. I think that it's a really interesting topic, and a registry might even be a good fit for one of the work items if someone wants to move this forward. Let's see, Jonathan, I believe you were in the queue.
Yes, yeah, so just jumping back to the key formats discussion, and I think, Ori, I certainly applaud your work. It's great. I think I'm a futurist, apparently, just like you, in embracing multi-format, multi-codex. And so I'm struggling in the DID working group about the CBOR representations, and I'm struggling to see the conflict here of that we want clear and concise representations of key formats, and it seems as though multi-formats and IPLD is satisfying those requirements. So I'm getting mixed signals from either the DID working group and now the community group that, oh, no, we do like multi-formats and IPLD. So I'm just struggling to reconcile the differences in public discussions.
Great. Thanks for your input. If there's a response, feel free to queue, but we should keep it brief as we are moving. We must move through the agenda. Okay. Thank you for your comment.
It's real quick. Sorry. On behalf of the scribe interrupt, Juan, make sure to put people's names before what they said. Otherwise, it will be lost who said what. We'd have to go back to the recording. That's it.
Yep, thank you. Definitely need to be a bit mindful of the new system, and thank you, Juan, for volunteering for scribing again. Cool. So moving the agenda, the last issue for us to review is the APAC call, which is now enabled because we have this Jitsi meeting infrastructure. One of the elements that I was talking about during chair nominations was organizing more inclusivity through getting the other half of the world if we truly want to make international standards. So we'll continue the work in that thread and possibly just even make it a work item for those interested. But really, we want to figure out getting the right folks involved so that we have consistent attendance and interesting topics to members, and also time zones that work for people for the meeting at a frequency that works too. And that's it on that. Great. So that was progress on action items. And then I'm going to hand it over to Anil John, who is, I believe, the Director of Technology at the Department of Homeland Security for a lot of innovative efforts. And he's going to tell us about government's perspective on DIDs and VCs and things in our ecosystems in his own words. And without further ado, Anil, you may have the floor.
Also, I wanted to make sure that I provided a perspective on this, not as a whole of government, but my perspective as a career federal employee who's been involved in championing and funding this work. I was struggling to figure out how best to structure the conversation here, and I wanted to leave enough time for Q&A at the end as well. So I figured I'd start with just the basics. How does a organization, or in this particular case, because we are focused on the VC and the DID work, how do we sort of get the, for lack of a better word, end up getting the requirements, for lack of a better word, in initiating the funding and doing...
Yeah, so I recommend, since it seems that Anil is presenting there...
Hakan, you're not muted.
Head over to the Zoom link for this time, but we'll try again next week with more RAM. So feel free to head over.
Sorry, Wayne, you're also not muted.
Okay. Growing pains. I figured I'd structure this conversation in three phases. One of them is, how was the decision made that we wanted to move out on anything to do with VCs and DIDs? Second one is the larger R&D aspect of what we were focused on and what is currently happening, right? So, and for that, to start out with, I will, for those I have not met before, in a previous life, I used to be the technical lead for the U.S. government's Federal Identity Credential Access Management Program at the General Services Administration. Part of the duties of that was I ran a program called the Trust Framework Solutions, which was designed to be the certification and accreditation authority for all identity services that the U.S. government purchased from the private sector. So you got to interact with a lot of the identity providers in the private sector, as well as a lot of the certification authorities that were playing in that space during that time as well. Part of that work involved running, you know, headfirst into the reality that social security numbers in general have been a thorn in the side of the identity folks as long as there have been social security numbers. The concept that a number that was designed to be an identifier that is widely usable and shareable ended up being conflated with an authenticator, and that in turn had all of these cascading impacts on, you know, privacy. A lot of the breaches that were happening and things like that was obviously pretty shocking. So that was one data point. The other data point was I was very much involved in a lot of the work around attribute sharing and designing attribute bundles for access control and the like. And one of the things that you sort of pick up in that space is there are some challenges in that space. One of them is from the perspective of attribute aggregation at that time, getting attribute bundles from a variety of different authoritative sources and perhaps presenting it to somebody who's asking for it in a consolidated, nice form was remarkably hard in the SAML OpenID Connect space, right? So data point number two. The third one was the traditional identity provider model basically had a, we are all familiar with the phone home problem, right? So in order to validate and verify an attribute that is being asserted by someone, you basically have to ping the issuer of that attribute, and if that issuer is either careless, malicious, they have the ability to do a lot of shenanigans with that. They can, you know, geolocate you, they can triangulate you, they can correlate you, right? So those were all challenges in that space. So the other piece of it on the non-technical side was you also deal with a lot of people who want to sell services to the U.S. government. I will simply note that one of the biggest yelling and screaming that I got from the community in general was when we made an update to our certification accreditation program, and we required an independent test suite in order to verify compliance with, at that time, the SAML profile of the Trust Framework Solutions to verify that a identity provider was actually conforming to it and they were actually delivering the attributes that they said that they were. Everybody wanted the business, but nobody wanted you accountable for delivering something that was interoperable. So these were all in the back of my mind, you know, at that time, right? So fast forward, I've always been very mindful of my career. So one of the things that I ended up doing was on the anniversary of my onboarding in any organization, I make a decision on whether, hey, do I want to continue to have this relationship with this organization for another year? So 3 years had passed. And the answer at that time for GSA ended up being a no. So I gave my notice, went hiking with my daughter who had just graduated from high school. We did the Tour de Mont Blanc. Then about 3 or 4 months into not doing much of anything other than just having fun, I made the mistake of having a coffee with, at that point in time, a director at DHS Science and Technology Directorate, Dr. Doug Mon. over 2 to 3 months, Doug did the godfather on me. You know, the classic line, right? I tried to get away. They pulled me back in. So they pulled me back into government service, and I became the identity management and data privacy R&D program manager. So that is where that intersected with the global bright and shiny rise of blockchain and DLT technology. So one of the things within my portfolio was a great deal of interest in understanding whether or not this magical thing that will solve all problems for everything, what does it actually do? What are the security, privacy, and interoperability properties of that? So I put into place a variety of R&D projects into place in order to sort of understand what was missing, what was actually working, and what were some of the challenges. So that is also when I got pitched by a group of rather interesting people. A gentleman by the name of Drummond Reed and Les Chasen from Respect Trust Network, Christopher Allen, as well as Manu Sponi, pitched me on this thing called, you know, we want to come up with a new way of representing identifiers, and you know, identifiers called a decentralized identifier. So obviously, in the back of my mind, I had the Social Security problem, and that they found a ready audience there in the work that they wanted to pitch us as an R&D project. So I absolutely, you know, did fund that work on the decentralized identifier specification, with the caveat that obviously it would be turned over to a global audience and global standards group, such that it would never be governmenty, and there would be an open voice from the community in sort of evolving that specification. And obviously the verifiable credentials followed the same trajectory, in that it addressed the phone home problem by breaking the direct connection between a verifier and an issuer, and also, you know, the attribute aggregation problem in some ways is actually being addressed by the verifiable presentation piece of it. So that is where the R&D piece of it, just to step back a bit, right? So my home organization is the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. I am in the Science and Technology Directorate, which has two functions. We are the science advisor to the department as a whole and its R&D arm. Now, when you talk about R&D, you can talk about basic research, applied research, advanced advanced applications, and, you know, product development, right? So keep in mind, DHS as an organization has never done basic research. We are an operational entity, but we've always done applied research, advanced applications, and product development. And S&T, in my role as the R&D program manager, that was where that funding for that came about. Now, fast forward about 2 to 3 years, and I had the opportunity to become part of the Silicon Valley Innovation Program as its technical director. SVIP is a bit different in that we actually are not an R&D program. We're in the business of making a pitch to the startup community, which is typically does not want to work with government because we are slow, does not move at the speed of startups. And so one of the things that our pitch to them is, you have interesting technology, we have interesting problems. We do not want you to pivot into government, but we would like to give you some funding in order to bake in the solution to our problem into your product. And we want you to take it out into the market and see if it becomes successful or not. If you become successful in the marketplace, we are happy to buy that from you. It is the value to the startup community in general is that we provide them two or three things. We do not take any equity in the company. We do not take any IP from the company. And we act as a reference customer in order to validate that technology. But the value to us is on the government side, in DHS side, is rapid access to new and innovative technologies. And two, we do not want to be in the business of actually supporting the O&M tail of something that is only government-y. we source our technology from the same place everybody else does, which is the private sector, right? So from that perspective, we want the companies to be commercially successful, and we want to basically ensure that there is a competitive, interoperable ecosystem of solution providers that are out there. So in the interest of time, I will simply note that our use cases tend to be bucketed into two or three different categories. One of them is very much around the custom side of the house. One of my operational component partners in it is U.S. Customs, one of the largest, if not the largest customs organizations on the face of the planet. They're very interested in ensuring that any goods that are coming into the country, there is a traceability of that good associated with them. So how do you apply these type of technologies in order to give them that visibility and assurance of that? The other set of use cases that we are into are from the perspective of we have currently paper-based credentials that are, for lack of a better word, susceptible to forgery and counterfeiting. So how do you sort of issue them in a manner that is under the control of the person who has the credential, who is the owner of that data, and has the ability to validate and verify at a moment as needed, right? So those were all, those are the two areas that we're focused on. Our use cases, I think, are public. It is around the import of steel, import of oil, import of natural gas, import of e-commerce, import of food safety in the import of goods. On the other side, our partner is Citizenship and Immigration Service, which is the sole authoritative entity for the issuance of a U.S. permanent resident card or a certificate of naturalization for somebody who becomes a naturalized American citizen, or for somebody who is given a eligibility to work in the U.S. if you're not an immigrant, right? So we are working with them in order to, as first one out of the gate, the digitization of a permanent resident card. So those are the things that we are focused on. A clear mantra here is there shall never be one ring to bind them all. We need cross-platform, cross-vendor interoperability. So one of the things that we specifically structured in our solicitations is we will not take self-attestations of interoperability support. We will require you to demonstrate interoperability by a multi-party interoperability plug fest against each other, as well as against validation against a test suite. That test suite is actually developed under the umbrella of the CCG so that it is available to everybody to use and improve. And that is going to be fleshed out more and more by the companies that are in our portfolio. And obviously, we are also requiring that the use of those specifications and standards that we identified, verifiable credentials, decentralized identifiers, which are built on a foundation of JSON LD as the baseline for what we need to do. So I'm going to stop there for right now. I had some other things to share, but I think in the interest of time, I wanted to make sure that there was an opportunity to ask any questions that I could answer at this time as well.
Great. Thank you so much for the presentation. So we're going to use a split queuing system. If you queue on IRC or you raise your hand on Zoom, we will recognize both. There aren't any speaker queues right now, so feel free to raise your hand in Zoom using that feature. You go to the participants tab. Go ahead.
Sorry, I think I acknowledged John just before you queued question mark.
Oh, okay, great. So Jonathan Holt, yeah, before.
So my question was around the security threat models, and there's a few of us on the call, including Wayne, Adrian, and myself, who are working on the security questionnaire for the horizontal review. And you had mentioned some of the companies would actually get thrown a red team eventually. And I'm wondering, because I'm still struggling with some of these security and threat models, in particular about JSON-LD, and I've talked to you about that in person before. And is there a willingness to assist with that, throwing a red team at the entire specification before we even get down this road of companies proposing plug fests?
So I'll simply note, the immediate answer is I'll have to think about it. I don't want to say yes or no at this point in time. The more nuanced answer is that, our program, my program is set up in four phases, and each phase is meant to reduce risk to the enterprise. Phase one is, for us is, can the company walk the talk? Is the team capable of delivering a minimum viable product that actually demonstrates all the things that we're looking for? Phase two is full capability built out, and phase three is when we actually have an independent red team actually have a go at the company to find out all these things. You actually bring up a pretty important point regarding what is actually missing in the current ecosystem. And what I will say is that what I'm struggling with as somebody who sort of has to assess the technologies that we actually want to use and want to bring in is the some sort of a criteria that we can use to judge the goodness of a DID issuance infrastructure, the goodness of a wallet. Now, in the absence of that, I am taking a very brute force approach to it, which is basically the companies that are under our portfolio, which they are under contract to us, they will each have our red team thrown at them, and we will basically get down to very low levels of detail in as far as the security, privacy, and interoperability implications. And using that data that is gathered from those red teaming, we intend to basically come up with our own criteria in the absence of a community-driven standards criteria. I don't want to do it. I don't have a choice if we want to be successful. So I would rather an independent test and assessment organization that is focused on that come up with a criteria that we could test against, that we could use. But in the absence of that, we're not waiting around for that. We're going to be using that. I know it's not a clean answer to what you asked, Jonathan, but that is the best answer that I can give you at this point in time. And having said that, we will share that the results of what we get sufficiently anonymized and the criteria. Our intention is to share that with the community so that if the community is not there yet, it helps to bootstrap the process as well.
Thank you for the question and answer. Kim, you have the floor.
Yes. So you've seen the development of the decentralized identity space from the beginning. So I'm interested if you have a bit of counterfactual analysis. So does anything stand out in terms of our current state versus where you anticipated we'd be years ago when you first started? And I'm mostly curious to hear, sort of what are we missing? What should, where are we falling short?
Yeah, I think the two places that I think that I don't see enough energy is, I think I just mentioned the assessment and testing piece of it already, so I won't belabor that. The other one is obviously one of the reasons that we actually just put into place the design competition was that, there are a lot of smart people on the CCG who come from a very deep design and technical background, and unfortunately, if you want these technologies to be used by regular people who do not have the depth of expertise and nuance that you have, you need to make it as easy as possible. I don't see a lot of work in the usability user experience side of it that is out there. The third piece of it, Kim, is that I see again, and this is also why in our program, we contractually wrote it into our requirement. Thou shalt participate in the community. Thou shalt, there will be an interoperability plug fest. I see a lot of people making attestations and a lot of people making claims of support for standards and specification with not a lot of independent validation testing against independent test suites. So I was hoping that we were farther ahead from a independent testing and the usability perspective and the evaluation criteria perspective, and I see all three of them are lagging a bit, and we're sort of putting our money and our energy where our mouth is in order to sort of address that.
Thank you so much for the question and answer. And as a final note, because we are at time, thank you again for all the contributions that you have brought to the community. And I'll definitely, we have seen, you know, tangible financial and just people's brain powers invested in this. And, you know, that's so important to drive the ecosystem forward. So we appreciate that.
Thank you very much. And I look forward to continuing to work with the community in moving this forward.
Thank you. Apologies, everyone, for the mid-meeting interruption. We will follow up with email what the next steps are here. Please stay tuned to ensure that's the right meeting link for next week.
An extra special shout-out to Juan Caballero for scribing today.
Yes, thank you so much, Juan.